maybe not necessarily invest in something today, but you want to start working to surround yourself with good people so that you can invest tomorrow. Because I can tell you one thing that's going to happen. The economy is going to continue to change. Things that affect lending in a multifamily side are going to change.
Welcome to the Passive Income Brothers podcast.
Here, we take the fear out of real estate investing using real life stories of everyday successful investors.
Let's go.
Welcome to another episode of the Passive Income Brothers podcast. My name is Tim Lyons, and today I'm joined by my co-host and brother, Greg Lyons. How are you doing today, Greg?
Tim, I'm doing great today. This is going to be such a fantastic episode because John Dessauer he's so inspirational, and having a chance to meet him in Orlando like we did a few months ago, I really feel the value he brings is just going to be great for our listeners.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I was fortunate enough to share the stage with him at Multifamily Mastery 4, and he was the MC of that phenomenal event. Highly recommend it to everybody for 2022. So today's guest successfully quit his corporate career only to start his first of many multi-million dollar companies in the same day. He has been the host of a national radio program on Sirius XM Radio. He has authored 4 books and has delivered educational, inspirational, and motivational products and presentations throughout the world with such notable acts such as John Childers and Robert Kiyosaki. John is dedicated to helping others achieve financial freedom through his entrepreneurial spirit. We are excited to have him on the show today. So without further ado, we bring you John Dessauer. Welcome, John Dessauer, to the Passive Income Brothers podcast. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm excited to be here. And, you know, I'm ready to see the brotherly love here between you two and how this whole thing rolls.
So we're going to bring it.
I know how it is with you, brothers. So I'm ready to go.
Well, in case our listeners didn't know, Greg broke my collarbone twice, speaking of brotherly love. So, yeah. So, I mean, there is a lot of love to be had between Greg and I. So I love you, buddy.
But, you know, Tim, I love you too. And John, thank you so much for bringing that up. I don't think we have enough time on the podcast to really get into brotherly love. So I think today we should really just stick to a little bit of real estate.
Yeah.
All right. So listen, I heard John on a podcast with one of my favorite people in the world, Gino. Favorite people being Jake and Gino from the Jake and Gino multifamily platform, who were instrumental in Greg and I's success here. But you had mentioned, I want to start the show off with a quote. You had said that wealth has nothing to do with money. Success has everything to do with failure. And life is as simple as you make it. And when I heard I had to rewind that because I said, wait a minute, that was just gold. So I want to go back to that. So John, can you just touch upon, you know, that quote? And I think it's so powerful for our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I was at an event, this must be 15 or 20 years ago, and I was on stage and I said something to that nature. And when I got off stage, they said, can you repeat that for me? And the woman was writing it down. And I thought, maybe I got something there. But that's kind of like my sign off, tag off line that, you know, if I'm ending a book or a blog or whatever it is, I put that there. But, you know, when I say that, my investing journey has been, you know, 20 some years now, and it really does. Success doesn't have much to do with money. As I've been doing this now for a couple of decades, I realize that you get paid, you get a return on that investment in other ways than monetarily. If you're just doing it for the money, I don't think you're going to get as much return as you're wanting. It's very superficial. It's very, you know, surface related, but there's a deeper thing with return: time with family, inventing stuff, writing stuff, enjoying the life, you know, kind of thing. And that's what I meant by that part of it. And then the second part of it about failure and fear really is the tie-in with that, fearing the failure. I think you got to use that like currency. You know, investing in fear, investing in failure is something that nobody talks about. Nobody wants to do. And I've looked at that and I said, you know, you can treat that like a currency. You can save it. You can invest it. You can spend it. You can do a lot of things with failure and fear that people don't do. And when you treat it like a currency, then you control it. When you are out of control, are not in control, that is when failure and fear become detrimental to somebody, to an investor specifically. And so that's why I said that over my time, I've looked at it and thought, you know, if I'm making the biggest purchase of my life and it's a 300 unit complex, or I'm investing in, you know, some other type of investment, digital currency or a bond or whatever it is, the gold market, and we have fear or trepidation moving towards that, start thinking of that fear as a currency and start looking at your past failures as a currency. Can I invest in that and learn from something from that failure? So that's what I meant by that part of it.
You know, that's great. You know, Tim, that, you know, that's great. Just because, John, we know you now as a quotable speaker, podcaster, those type of things. And we had the opportunity to meet you in Orlando last year. You did a great job speaking at the Jake and Gino event, Multifamily Mastery 4. But you mentioned that over two decades of doing this, how you came to, you know, have these quotes and stuff like that. Can you take the listeners back and just kind of talk about how you got into real estate? Because I think you've touched every part of real estate, if I'm not mistaken. And just take us back and kind of walk us through your real estate journey, because that's a lot of the people that are listening to this, maybe in their infancy in their real estate journey. Yep. But let's hear about your journey through real estate.
So, Greg, that's a real polite way of saying I'm old. I appreciate that.
I saw nice right job, through Greg. It.
Nice job, Greg.
No problem.
But yeah, I like keeping it simple. The third part of that quote that we were talking about earlier is life is as simple as you make it. I guess I started to invest in real estate because in South Chicago, I always grew up in apartment buildings. I was a single parent household. My father passed when I was younger, and I always lived in apartments my whole life until I bought my first house after I graduated from college. And the interesting thing about that is I was able to see the investing side of the world from the inside looking out. In other words, I was in the product of somebody else's investment. And if you've ever put yourself in that position of, as a 10-year-old even, I remember thinking, why is this guy coming once a month to collect this rent check? And why is my mom leaving every single day to make that rent check happen? And I thought, I was around 10, but I remember thinking there is a difference in what people do and how they do it. Specifically remember thinking that. And so when I graduated from college, I was able to get into the corporate world, and I realized pretty quickly that that was not for me. I also realized that it was more of a feeling in that, is this it? I know with what you guys do and, you know, the careers of that, I don't know if this was just me, but I think a lot of people go through this. They're like, they get to their career and they're in it and they're like, shit, what is this? What is all about? Is this what everyone's been talking about? And I think there's a little bit of a letdown by that. And the letdown is this. We oftentimes, when we talk about going to school, getting a job, getting into a career, it's usually somebody else's dream, not necessarily yours. And when I was living in those apartment buildings growing up, I was in someone else's investment dream. When I was going to the corporate world, I was in somebody else's hope dream for me. And I loved my college experience. I thought it was fantastic. I would do it 1,000 times again. I know that's not the path for everyone, but I just wonder if we all live that, how soon can we live our own, what we call our own dream and not somebody else's? And it's tough because you're young, you're making decisions. Do I go to school? What field do I get in? You really don't know. You really don't know till you become an adult. But one thing I did know is that when I got to the corporate world, that wasn't for me. And I wanted to kind of explore this idea of buying something and having somebody else go to their 9-to-5 to cut me the most important check of the month. As a matter of fact, sometimes they don't even need to go to their 9-to-5. I get that check from the government. So I thought, man, this guy that bought the apartment buildings that I lived in growing up was onto something. And I can understand that. I can wrap my head around that. What I can't wrap my head around is, for me anyway, the other people could be fine, but for me, it was going to the corporate world and kind of experiencing someone else's investment dream. If you're in the corporate world, you're in somebody else's investment dream. It could be a stockbroker, it could be the person that created the company. But for me, that was why I got into investing and got, more importantly, became an entrepreneur.
John, I love that story. And I think what's so powerful about that is because I think a lot of people, whether you're in real estate investing or not, they can feel that, right? Some term midlife crisis, perhaps, right? Where they can liken it to a midlife crisis. But I think a lot of us, you know, like, just like you said, we follow the rules. We go to school, get good grades, go to a good college, major in something you want to do, right? Get a job, max out that 401k, go find a mate, have some kids, you know, and eventually you can retire and you could be 60, 65, 70, and then you can start living your life, right? And that was like what our parents, you know, by no fault of their own, they kind of just told us, like, that's the way that they grew up. And that's how they just tried to do the right thing for us and pass it on. But I think it's changing, right? There's a whole paradigm shift out there for a lot of people. And I think, you know, a lot of us, like myself included, I wanted to be, do, and have more, right? I am fulfilled being a New York City firefighter. I love that job. I get in the car and I have the biggest smile on my face because I know I'm going to spend 24 hours with some superior people. We're going to have a great time, go through some crazy things together. And then I get to go home, right? And be with my family. So, but for me, you know, when I was leaving the firehouse, I was maybe putting on my scrubs and going to work 12 hours or 12 and a half hours, standing on my feet in an emergency room where all hell's breaking loose. And then I would, you know, go home exhausted. And I'm like, is this it, right? I'm putting in the hours. I'm making decent money. I'm paying all my bills. We go on vacation twice a year, you know, but is this it? And how can I make that shift into something more, right? And I think where people get stuck is right here. You know, what do I do? Who do I trust? Where can I go? Real estate is something that I know that I should be a part of, but I don't know how to get started. And that limiting belief, the self-talk that we have in our head and in our gut shuts down any further investigation. And that's where, you know, coming through my journey and Greg's journey of surrounding ourselves with similar type people who have similar values. They want to be, do, and have more. They want to educate themselves. They want to take the next step. So, but not everybody wants to be on the active side of real estate. And that's why we termed this show the Passive Income Brothers. Because if you read a lot of success books or, you know, business biographies, the most wealthy people out there will talk about having multiple streams of income, whether that's from business royalties or book royalties or some of their investment income. And when you hear that, it sounds great. But what I want people to know out there is that it's possible. A New York City firefighter can do it. John Dessauer can do it. Greg Lyons can do it, you know, and it's possible. So it's surrounding yourself with people. And what I like is you mentioned like making strategic life decisions. Right? How do you want to live your life? And how can you back into that by making some of these decisions? So, you know, John, a lot of people get stuck with how to get started. But really, I've heard you talk about this topic on a lot of other podcasts and at Multifamily Mastery 4. But there's different buckets of income out there. There's a tax code that, you know, is basically a roadmap for us as investors to kind of follow. So can you touch on like, how does real estate, especially for a passive investor, how can that move the needle forward for them in their investing journey?
Yeah. So first of all, I think that word investing is an important key word. When you were just talking about retirement, no one should retire. I know this sounds counterproductive, but nobody should retire. You should do something you love and do it forever. If you look at the stats, more people get sick and die in the time frame of the day of retirement on. It's ridiculous, the stats. So I don't believe in retirement. I don't like that word. I don't like that action. Everyone's like, oh, I'm going to do that when I retire. Should do it now. Mm-hmm. You know, just letting you know you should do it now. But the idea of investing is taking something and putting it into something else. Usually it solves a problem. It's a solution for somebody else. They need money, you invest money, and that company is able to buy stuff or invest themselves. Or it could be where you take money and invest it in a building and other people are able to live there with good quality rental housing. That's a problem to solve. So investing is really an idea of solving problems. We very rarely look at that because we're so concerned with the monetary return. Wealth has nothing to do with money. It has everything to do with other things. And, you know, the other things are, you know, other ways to get paid in real estate, other ways. And so when I talk about that, it's good investors should get excited and get paid by knowing that they're helping solve one of the biggest crises, I forget how you say that plural-wise, one of the biggest crises that we have today is good quality rental housing for people. Yeah, demand for housing is off the charts. I mean, it's to a point, you know, in most major markets, it's 96, 97%. Now there's an economic occupancy as well. Physical occupancy, economic occupancy, you want to denote that. But physical occupancy is 96% plus across the country in most major metro markets. Mm-hmm. And I think that is going to stay with us. That is something that as investors, we need to solve. The richest people in the world. Now, I'm going to go back to the money thing, but the richest people in the world maybe are not the happiest people. I'm just talking monetarily now. I am switching gears. They got that way because they solved the problem. I think if we can continue to solve this problem of providing good quality rental housing for people, that's never going to go out of style, at least for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. You know, depending on where you read or what you read, we're probably 4 or 5 or 6 million housing units short as a nation.
Yeah.
And, you know, we do have some economic impact of printing money and low interest rates. But, you know, with the inflation kind of being a little bit out of control these days, the price of housing, a single family home, is really, really rising. So in effect, we're really creating a renter nation. Yeah. And like you said, you know, a lot of people, when they invest, they're solving a problem for people. But most people didn't grow up investing in real estate syndications, helping people find great housing. You talk a lot about getting over fear, working through it, and kind of learning from failure as well. How do investors, a lot of first-time investors, people that didn't grow up investing in real estate syndications, how does that first-time investor get over that fear of saying, yes, I could help people with good quality housing? How can I get involved?
Greg, that's a great question, because when you do look at today, there are a lot of, I guess, challenges that are being presented to us by the news and media and things like that. I find it interesting that, you know, the news is on first thing when you get up in the morning and the last thing when you go to bed at night. And I don't watch the news for that reason. I don't want to fill my head in the morning and the last thing I think about being the negativity. From an economic standpoint, I do think things are inflated today, which means that the price of things are higher due to a reason or two. I think a reason that we could say things are inflated is because, number one, it was maybe done on purpose with low interest rates. The lower the interest rate, the more money out in the system. And the definition of inflation is too many dollars chasing too few goods or services. And then when you compound that with a supply chain challenge, whatever the reason is for that, we could debate that. But, you know, it does present some challenges looking forward. A first-time investor might say, well, I'm not going to even get involved in investing right now because it's too turbulent. But my argument would be that without the turbulence, wealth is not created. Without the challenges, return is not created. And I'm an avid reader. I try to get through at least a book every 2 weeks. I'm reading Atomic Habits right now. I read
I just finished that this morning. Unbelievable. James Clear. Forget about it.
So I'm really enjoying that. I read Green Lights last week, but I'm on a vein of books right now. They're fantastic. But one of the things that I'm thinking about right now is a book that I read a long time ago with my background in business. And it's The Wealth of Nations by Adam Smith. And in that book, he talks about the demand, supply and demand scenario. But we forget when we talk about the economic argument of supply and demand, we forget about the attachment to that, and that is ability to pay. I think with this inflationary, which actually has another tax, these low interest rates, and based on what the Fed says they're going to do and what I think they're going to do, you're going to have interest rates go up. I look at the 10-year treasury all the time. It's at 1.75, 1.8, somewhere in there. A year ago, it was at 1.05. So we're significantly higher than that. And I think what is going to happen? A new investor that is looking at all this is probably thinking, what is going on here? I'm not going to move at all. And I think that that's probably the wrong decision to make. Now, I'm not saying to jump into every investment, but you want to be ready for what you think is coming. That's why syndications are great, because there's a lot of good professionals there that you can tie into with knowledge as to what's happening. And that's kind of the model of the syndication side of the business with multifamily. You have a syndicator, and then everybody that participates in that syndication as limited partners. So you might have a general partner and then limited partners. And if you're a newbie, if you're just starting out, my advice would be to maybe not necessarily invest in something today, but you want to start working to surround yourself with good people so that you can invest tomorrow. Now, tomorrow might be literally 24 hours from now, but you want to start working and building your network and being amongst these people. Because I can tell you one thing that's going to happen. The economy is going to continue to change. Rents are going to change. Occupancy levels are going to change. Things that affect lending in a multifamily side are going to change. Interest rates and LTVs and things like that. You want to be ready, because opportunities that come, the ones that jump on them in the most turbulent of times are the ones that have the best return typically. That's why I love turbulence. We're in a turbulent time. If you want everything to be, you know, roses and pumpkin patches, and I need to think of another thing, puppies. You're not going to be a good investor. Investing and return needs turbulence. And that's where I think we're at right now.
Yeah. So, I mean, as we're recording this, the markets have been having a tough start, a tough go in January, right? So I think people, what happens is with the regular everyday investor, when things are good, they have a sense of feeling wealthy, right? They look at their 401k statement, or they're looking at the rising value of their home because they're stalking Zillow and they're plugging in their address and being like, yeah, babe, look at this, right? And we feel wealthy, right? So now they have a confidence to jump into maybe a riskier asset. And what do they know? People by and large know the stock market. But what happens is they're kind of getting in towards the top, right? And then what happens is we're having a cruddy start to the stock market in July. And then people get scared. And what do, John? They sell when we're getting crushed. And then they're saying, you know what? Investing sucks. I don't understand it. I don't know it. Getting hurt all the time. And I think by and large, I mean, I've been there, right? I've made these mistakes myself, you know? And this is why I love real estate. This is why I kind of geek out on macroeconomics. I just came back from LA this weekend from a phenomenal conference. And this is what we talked about, right? Inflation is a really real thing right now, right? People everywhere, you go to the restaurant, the coffee shop, everyone kind of knows and is feeling whatever they're feeling about inflation. And essentially, one of the people out there named Ken McElroy, who is a phenomenal real estate investor, probably, you know, one of the leaders right now in content and all that and education, he had a great talk. And what he was talking about was, you know, inflation is nothing more. You said it was too many dollars chasing too few goods and services, which is part of an economic thought, right? I think it's called Austrian economics, right? And you know, what he was saying is, like, in real terms, it's a transfer of wealth from savers to borrowers, right? And it's kind of, that runs, you know, counter to a lot of what we think, right? We think of having debt as being bad, like credit card debt, car loans, whatever the case may be, layaway plans at Best Buy so you can get that giant TV, right? Those are all consumer debt, and that's, you know, not the best kind of debt out there. But when you have a transfer of wealth from savers to borrowers, what we're in essence saying, if you're in cash right now, well, guess what? You know, inflation is the CPI that they're reporting is 7%. The macroeconomic geeks that I kind of listen to, they're saying it's close to double that, right? So if you have $100,000 sitting in a savings account, your purchasing power is being depleted by about anywhere from $7,000 to $14,000 over that year. You know, and people don't understand that. It's a hard concept to kind of grasp. But when you're using leverage from real estate, right, when you're applying a fixed rate, low interest rate loan to buy an asset that's going to be spitting off cash month after month after month and paying you and putting dollars in your pocket that you can go buy gas, go pay tuition, go buy a boat, whatever it might be. That is the value of real estate. And in turbulent times, it may run counter. Oh man, like I keep on hearing that real estate values are inflated. I keep on hearing this and I keep on hearing that. And the power is to surround yourself with people like John Dessauer, with people like Greg and Tim Lyons, who are in the market doing the thing that we're doing so that we can create opportunities for people to invest. But I was just basically talking about how real estate investors can benefit from inflation, you know,
leverage
and surrounding yourself with people that are basically doing the thing in turbulent times so that they, you know, we can provide opportunities, you know, for people. So
it's interesting. You're talking about Ken McElroy. I've known him for a long time. I remember sitting in his office in Phoenix, probably 20 years ago. Well, no, maybe 18 years ago, just having some good meetings. And my first book came out, but he's the world of knowledge when it comes to multifamily and stats. He's big on stats, which is really good. That's one of the ways that I think in turbulent times, your network, the people that you're with and what they are offering as far as guidance and knowledge, that's when you can eliminate some of that fear, diminish some of that fear, because inflation is here. We can feel it. You can feel it when you go to the stores with the shelves. You can feel it when you go get gas. The CPI is 7%, probably really 14% because they eliminate fuel and food. I wonder why they do that on those numbers. But you know, when you get to the point and you can feel it at that level, yeah, it's here. And I'm sure the Fed is going to come in and deal with that. Maybe not so much with their meeting this week in January, but certainly in March, I feel like that's going to happen. And we need to start asking ourselves the question, how do we invest in a time where we have inflation, when items are inflated? In other words, where you're pumping the value up, how do we invest in those times and what are the risks there? Do we risk a bubble? If there is no bubble, can it keep going? Can it keep inflating? And what does the Fed action with not only raising interest rates, but quantitative easing, the elimination of buying those bonds on the market, what does that do to? I was talking about the 10-year treasury earlier. You know, the reason that rate is going up is because they need to entice people to buy those bonds so we can print money. Less foreign countries, China, India, Russia, you know, some of the other ones, they're not buying those U.S. bonds anymore. So the Fed is doing that. They've raised their balance sheet to $9 trillion, give or take, $800 million a month in buying those. So what does that look like for investors in general, but the beginning investor? What I would say is get with your group, get with your tribe, if you will, mm-hmm. and really kind of understand the guidance of the Lyons brothers, Ken McElroy, and others that are really kind of in the trenches here. And I think that's where it'll be a safe harbor for you moving forward. Inflation is here. Higher interest rates are coming, at least for the near term. I don't know how much they can go with it, but those are the waves. Those are the turbulent things that make good investors, because those are the things that create returns.
Absolutely.
Greg, let me just jump in real quick. I know Greg and I have like a back and forth combo that we kind of do, but I just, sometimes I can't help myself. Right. And I'm hesitant to kind of really get into this, but you know, inflation real quick, while we're on this, people ask me all the time, Tim, how do you know so much about this? And then, you know, how does it really affect me? Right. Cause I'm still living, I'm still waking up, I'm still going to work, I'm still putting gas in my car. Yes, it's more expensive. And 7% doesn't seem that bad, people say. And when I try to explain to them that it's more like 14%, their kind of eyes glaze over, right? And they're like, oh God, here comes an economics lesson. But really quick, right? Really quick. When the federal government reports a CPI number, they're enticed to keep that number low, right? Because they have to pay benefits based upon the going CPI, right? And they have to, the government's financial situation, if you will, is based upon that number. So they're enticed to keep that number low, right? And what goes into that number? Well, guess what? If they want to make that number lower, they can do something called substitution, right? So if the price of a New York sirloin at the butcher like quadrupled in price, they're going to say, well, you know what? People aren't going to buy steak this week. They're going to buy pork, or they're going to buy chicken cutlet, right? So we're going to take the, you know, 50% increase in red meat off the table, and we're going to substitute chicken cutlet. And that's, you know, only gone up, say, 6%, right? That's called substitution. And they do that across the board. That's just an example, right? Because food and energy prices are considered to be too volatile to put into the CPI, right? So they don't even include the price at the pumps. They don't even include the price of food. And guess what? What are everyday Americans, you know, consuming? food and fuel, right? There's another thing that they can do, hedonic indexing, right? And that's kind of like a more, it's a pretty, you know, in-depth topic, but they can do hedonic indexing, they can do substitution, right? And then what really blows my mind as a real estate investor is that they do something to see what the rents would be. So they send out a survey, and I've never gotten the survey, but they send out a survey to homeowners and say, if your house was going to be put on the market for rent, what would you be willing to pay for that house? Right. And people don't know, you know, Greg, if we sent that to Dad, I mean, would Dad have any idea what he could get the house for? Right. So they
send
surveys out, they get them back, and they're grossly underrepresentative of what the going market rates are. Now, there's a ton of data. We're in 2022. There's a million data points that these guys in the federal government could use. And they're using a survey to ask people, what would you rent your house for? Right. Now, listen, we invest in the Sun Belt, the Southeast, right? We know that rents have gone up 8, 10, 20, 30% in some markets, right? And that's not being captured in the CPI. So when people are listening to this, just know that they might report 7% CPI, consumer price index, and that's the consumer's kind of rate of what their inflation, right? What is the value of their money going down by? The second thing was the PPI, the producer's price index, right? That's the cost of what the producers in our economy, how much does it cost to make a car? How much does it cost to make a truck? How much does it cost to get groceries from here to there, right? And that's 9%+. So we haven't even felt the pain yet on the CPI. It's coming, it's going to continue to go higher, right? Because the cost of making the goods is actually going to be passed on to the consumers, because the producers are not going to keep that on their bottom line. They're going to pass it on to the consumers. And why do I say this? Because, you know, when it comes to real estate on a 200 unit, 300 unit complex, we value that building by the net operating income, right? So the health of that building is governed by how much income that property can produce. It's not governed by what the next door building has sold for, what the building down the street has sold for. Do we kind of look at that? Yeah, but it's really that net operating income. And during inflationary times, you know, people sign 1-year leases, right? So they might sign a lease for $1,000 for this year. Well, guess what? Next year, that might be $1,200, right? So, or $1,250 even, or $1,400, depending on where the inflation is. Because as an investor in a cash flowing physical asset that throws off cash, and we have 1-year contracts with our you know, residents, that's how real estate investors win. They can stay ahead of the curve each and every time. And I'm going to yield the microphone back to Greg and get off my economics little chair here. But, you know, Greg, what do you have to say for that?
Well, no, you already used the term cruddy today, so that was one. And then you skipped in line. So really, I want to hear what John has to say about the latest soliloquy there. Love that.
So I think it's really, really interesting. You know, I try to look less at interest rates when I'm trying to think about the economy, and I look more at bonds. And the reason that you want to look at bonds is because they're tied to so many things. They're tied to the real estate market, for instance. As that 10-year treasury keeps creeping up, one of the things we've noticed significantly is refis are slowing down. And somebody says, well, John, do you think we'll have a scenario of the 80s where inflation was so high, the Fed came in and jacked interest rates to 18, 19%? Do you think we'll see that? And I said, well, I don't think we will. And the reason that I don't think we will is because when you, as the interest rates go up, yes, the cost of borrowing goes up, but those bonds are changing as well, and they react to each other. Imagine as we want to entice people to come in and buy those bonds, which is a promise to pay by our government. Mm-hmm. And we entice them by giving them a higher rate. It's at the 10 years at 1.75 to 1.8, somewhere in there right now. But some people say by the end of the year, it might be at 3. The reason it might be there is because we have to entice people to come in to buy those bonds. We take their dollars and print. We can print them. But interest rates overall, all kinds of rates, I don't see jumping to exorbitant levels because we as a country have a national debt that we pay interest on every single month. And if you look at the U.S., if you go to usdebtclock.org, I don't know if you've been there or seen that site, it's pretty frightening. But if you go there and you look at the amount of money that we bring in through taxes And the where that money is spent, a lot of it is being spent towards the interest on our debt. So that's why I don't think the Fed is in a very tough position to where they can't go gangbusters on raising rents, raising interest rates, because we run into that problem, the ability to pay, supply and demand. Adam Smith wrote about this in the 1800s. The Wealth of Nations is the book. But the ability, supply and demand, the ability. The reason that our treasury notes were at one or less a year plus ago is because there was more demand than there is today. Other countries are starting to lose faith in the U.S. dollar. What we do not want to have happen is the reserve currency status go away. That's another show, Tim and Greg. Yeah, I do think inflation's here. I think the turbulence is something in the multifamily world that we will have to deal with. I think raising rents, as you mentioned, Tim, in your description, that rent going to $1,200, I think has that possibility as long as the tenants have the ability to pay that. And this inflationary higher cost of food, water, fuel kind of bites into that ability a little bit. And that's the thing that I look for. But that's the thing that is also going to give us as multifamily investors, entrepreneurs, and as well, the opportunity moving forward. So I look forward to it. Cash flow investing is a really nice way to look at things. When you're looking at equity investment in an inflationary standpoint, I think that's where it becomes dangerous.
Oh, that's very good. And, you know, I think this has been a great discussion, just kind of about the economy in general and how real estate fits into that. And, you know, we're not saying that real estate should be 100% of anyone's portfolio, but there is a space to carve out for a syndication and different things like that. So this has been a great discussion about that. You know, John, we ask each of our people that we bring on the show three questions at the end of every show, just kind of get their thoughts. And we've had some great responses, really interesting responses as well. And, you know, the first thing or kind of point we ask people is, again, a lot of our first-time investors think that investing in real estate is too risky. So when you hear something like that, what comes to mind?
Well, I think risk is measured by a couple of things. Number one, fear. Are we investing in that fear or are we just not taking it for granted? Again, fear and failure, you can spend, save, and invest, or you can do nothing with it. That's the fourth thing. And I choose to invest in it. So when we look at risk and we look at the fear with that, what are we investing in? Are we investing in the loss, the dip, the downside? Or are we looking at that downside and saying, that's my opportunity? That's where I can bring value to the market. And that's where I can make a change, not only in myself and my financial situation, but I can solve a problem in providing good quality rental housing to others. So when I look at real estate and I look at somebody saying, that's too risky for me, what they're saying is, they're going to leave the fear alone. They're going to leave the idea of maybe failure down the road alone. And they're not going to save it, invest it, or spend it. They're going to do nothing with it.
Awesome. That's good. That's
love
good.
Love that, John.
Tim, we haven't heard that. We haven't heard that response.
No, that was
kind
great.
Of diving into fear and failure. I love that.
Boom. John, I think we kind of covered the second question that I kind of asked people, but one of my early mentors through reading books was Robert Kiyosaki. And he wrote, you know, a book that a lot of real estate investors know and love and cherish. It's called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And in that book, if you listen to him on his podcast these days, he's always saying this one thing, and it can drive people away if they don't know what he's talking about. And I know we covered this a little bit during the show, but he always says that savers are losers and debtors are winners. So if someone were to say, John, what does that mean? You know, how would you respond?
So what that means basically is the idea of assets and liabilities. And as a saver, you know, people think that that's an asset that really is a liability, especially in 2022 because of inflation. You know, 7 to 14% of it is being eroded just by sitting there. Again, what are you doing with that? Just like fear, you can save it, spend it, invest it, or do nothing. As a saver, you're really doing nothing with it, and it's losing value doing to somebody else. So because it's somebody else's asset, that's a promise to pay. Saving money is a promissory note. If you look on, I don't have a dollar here, but if you look on any dollar, you'll see that promise to pay. And, you know, one person's asset is another person's liability. So when Mr. Kiyosaki says savers are losers, they're losing to inflation. And debtors are winners, meaning a lot of times, if you can be the bank, you know, when I grew up in apartment buildings in South Chicago, I was indebted, or my mother was indebted to the apartment owner. The reason she went to her 9-to-5 is to cut him the most important check, because in her mind, she has to put a roof over for her family. And that was the only thing on her mind. I got to pay the rent. And so when we're debtors, like the owner of the apartment building was, you're going to have people, the most important thing to them is paying that rent. That's why they become winners, because then they're passive. They have other people going to their 9-to-5 to cut them the most important check. That check covers operational expenses of the building, debt service on the building, and cash flow to that apartment owner. And that's what puts food on the table, clothes on the kids, gas in the car.
Love that.
Yeah, we always say the biggest things that people take care of each month are food, clothing, and apartments.
That's right.
So that's definitely a good one there. And then our last question or kind of statement is from Jim Rohn, who's he's no longer with us, but he's been a mentor to Tim and I for a while now. And he said that formal education will make you a living. Self-education will make you a fortune. What does that mean to you?
First of all, Jim Rohn, I love the guy. I listen to that guy. And one of the things, I love several things about him, but one of the things that I love the most about him is when he was speaking, you would hear the cadence in his voice. And there's a cadence that goes on with great speakers. Martin Luther King had it. Jim Rohn had it. And I really appreciated that about him. But I also appreciated the lessons of investing in yourself and making yourself better. A lot of people today, I notice, are going the easy route. Like, I'm going to go here for more money, or, you know, there's states and cities that are saying, hey, we're going to make it mandatory that we're going to pay a wage of X amount, $15, $18, whatever that is, or we're going to raise minimum wage. And so what I think about is guys like Jim Rohn, where he's saying, you know, it's not, if we make the wages higher, we still have not improved the quality of the worker or the skill set of the worker. If you want more money, make yourself more valuable to the marketplace. And the way that you do that is by being on your podcast, by reading books, by going to events. I know, Tim, you just said you got back from LA. Surrounding yourself with people that are at the next level. You become the people you hang out with. I know there's a lot of sayings on that. It's so true. You know, so if you change that up. So what I believe Jim Rohn meant by that is, if you really want to get ahead, stop relying on other things like the government, like your job, like other things, and take it upon yourself to make you more valuable to the marketplace. If you're more valuable to the marketplace, people will notice that, companies will notice that, and they'll invest in you by giving you higher wages. And that's longevity. You'll have that as a chronic situation, not chronic in a negative way, chronic meaning long-term, yep. As opposed to, I'm going to go to this new job because they pay a higher wage. Even though the job sucks, I'm going there for the money, as opposed to having the marketplace come to you because you have the skill set and you can bring value to the marketplace. That's what I believe Jim Rohn meant when he had said that statement.
Boom. I love that, John. Way to go, man. Listen, this has been a tremendous show. Thank you so much for coming on the Passive Income Brothers podcast. If our listeners wanted to get a little bit more, Greg, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I just want to say, John, you've done so much. I remember I inadvertently called you old at the beginning of this podcast.
But, sure did.
You know, you've accomplished so much over the decades. You've been in every facet of real estate. You're at a national radio show on Sirius XM. You're an author of 4 books. You're a consultant. You're a speaker. What is 2022 going to bring for John Dessauer? Because I know you're not retiring. I know that's not happening. But what's 2022 bringing for you?
So I've really kind of been focusing on my health, try to run about 30 miles a week. My diet has kind of completely changed. I can fuel those runs. That's helped my business tremendously. Like, I'm more focused. I'm trying to be more present. I am more present. And I think that all of those things are getting me in a better position so I could take advantage of what's coming in 2022 with everything that we talked about during this podcast. So that's kind of where my mind leads with me first when people ask about 2022. But I think on a business side of things, I'm really excited about what we're doing here on the lending side, the brokerage side. We're in Illinois, Indiana, Florida, and also on the consulting side, we do a lot of that as well. So it's been a busy time, and I'm looking really forward to what's coming in 2022, both on the health front, some of the challenges I've got in place. I'm going to ride a bicycle across the whole state of Iowa this summer in a challenge. A couple of the other things, I'm climbing a mountain this weekend. So all of that is really good stuff. It's not what's coming. It's actually what's here and where we're going. So I'm excited about it.
Seems like we have to update our to-do list. What do you think?
Really? he's setting the bar kind of high, but I like it.
Let's go, man. Come on. Let's go.
Love it. John, thank you so much. This has been a tremendous, tremendous podcast for the Passive Income Brothers. And I look to do many more with you, sir. I appreciate you, your outlook. And I'm so happy that I had a chance to share the stage with you at MM4. And so if our listeners want to find a little bit more about you and your business, how could they reach out to you?
So if you go to johnvestauer.com, you can do that. From there, you can just reach out or you can get to our other companies, a lending or brokerage or any of the other ones that we can help you out with. But that'd be a great place to start.
Awesome. Until next time, talk to you then.
Thank you so much.
Bye now. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Passive Income Brothers podcast. We would be grateful for your support of our podcast by giving our show a 5-star rating and review, and subscribing to our show on your favorite podcast platform. Don't forget to take inspired action after listening to this show so that you can start building out your passive income streams. Finally, head on over to citysidecap.com to connect with us and find out more information about how to get started passively investing in real estate.